Chapter 4. Eclipse. Messengers. The Sleeper Awakens. It was deep night over Terra's greatest peak when Rubio returned to the Imperial Palace, and his suspicions were aroused when the monitors of the Adeptus Custodes granted him direct entry into the inner reaches, without first stopping to board and search the shuttle he had commandeered. It was not protocol, and it was not expected. Although the knight-errant's permissions were all in order and correct, even he, as one of the Chosen, was not immune to the ironclad security procedures that the Primarch Rogel Dorn had instituted across the Terran capital. Few beings could pass as freely as he did now, and that could only mean one thing. Despite travelling in Vox silence on his suborbital flight back from the edge of the acid rainforest, Rubio was expected. The Sigilite knew he was coming, and he had smoothed the way. Leaning into the cramped cockpit, the warrior looked over the shoulder of the mute servitor pilot and saw the play of text on the hololithic monitor screen before it. They were being directed to a tertiary flight platform on the eastern range of the Briar's Arcade. Rubio frowned, his suspicions confirmed. The landing pad was isolated and provided direct access to Malkador's sanctuary tower. After touchdown, as the dying whine of the shuttle's engine echoed out across the palace towards the petitioner's city and beyond, Rubio strode off the little craft's drop ramp and into the middle of a cluster of Chosen troopers in grey carapace armour. None of them spoke to him or offered a word of explanation, and he did not need them to act as guides. Still, the soldiers jogged to keep pace with the legionary as he crossed a connecting bridge and passed through the membrane of the shimmering void shield cowl that surrounded the tower. Malkador's private domain had its own layer of secondary protection beneath the mighty barriers of the palace, and they were more than just technologies that could resist energy weapons or kinetic impact. Rubio sensed other forces at the edges of his perception, and glimpsed semi-invisible warding icons that had been secretly worked into the tower's decorative sculptures and elegant architecture. That the Sigilite had reservoirs of power unknown to all others had never been in doubt, but Rubio found himself wondering, now he was close at hand, what depths they plumbed. The bridge led into an entrance hall, and as they passed inside, Rubio caught a glimpse of another figure in storm-dark power armour moving off in the other direction. He saw a sullen, heavily scarred face before it vanished into shadow. It was another knight-errant, that much was certain, but his aura and his aspect were unfamiliar to the Psyker. How many of us are there? Rubio wondered if he would ever know. The troopers halted in front of a wide door, as silent as ever. It slid open on whispering electromagnetics to allow Rubio into a great reading room. Other doors ringed the chamber, amid shelves of mnemonic tablets, data morbs, scrolls, and heavy ancient books. Oddly, many of the shelves had obvious gaps, where items had recently been removed, and Rubio saw a human-form mechanoid in the process of selecting a series of black-clad tomes. One by one, the silver-skinned robot plucked them from their places and craned them into a hod-like carrier mounted on its back.
"I am relocating a few items from my collection," said Malkador in a lecturing tone.
Rubio followed the sound of his voice, coming across to him from a long, upholstered bench. Flickering light illuminated the surroundings, cast by plasmatic flames burning in a black metal basket atop a staff. An imperious iron eagle peered out of the fires, and the staff stood as rigid as a spear that had been rammed into the ground. The Sigilite had a data slate in his hand, and he switched it off with a flick of his wrist as he looked up, dropping it on a nearby table.
"I am sending them somewhere more secure."
"There is a place on Terra more secure than the Imperial Palace." Rubio looked closer at one of the shelves, and his eyes narrowed as he realized he could not read the titles on the spines of the books. It was not that they were in a language he did not know, but rather that the words were blurry and malformed, shapes that only gave the impression of being letters.
"There isn't," Malkador agreed, then pointed at the books.
"Don't stare too hard. The cantrips in place upon these works have a deleterious effect on those without the clearance to know them."
He smiled, and there was a little cruelty in it.
"A librarian in the greatest library, and yet unable to read. What a tragedy."
Its work done, the now fully loaded mechanoid sped away on wheels hidden in the soles of its feet, leaving the two of them alone.
"This knowledge is forbidden," said Rubio.
"Isn't that what tyrants always say? To stop the lesser orders from learning too much, lest they challenge their dominance?" Beneath his hood, Malkador's smile turned brittle.
"When you have my perspective, one understands that some things were not meant to be known by commonplace minds."
"Who decides where the line is drawn between the common and the uncommon?" Rubio felt the pressure of the sigillite's most gentle telepathic probe upon his thoughts, and even that was almost overwhelming.
"One day you will," Malkador told him.
He looked away, and for the first time Rubio noticed a velvet bag on the nearby table. A few silver coins lay atop it, their surfaces covered with intricate designs. Rubio had the sudden compulsion to come closer and pick one up, but he ignored the impulse.
"What are you doing here, Rubio?"
Malkador went on. The sigillite undoubtedly knew the answer, but he wanted to hear the warrior say it. Rubio took a breath and spoke about Melida Gydasian, explaining Garrow's orders to him, and of how that had led him and the others to the jungle camp. Rubio told Malkador what they had found there, the survivors they rescued, and of Jotun's sacrifice. The sigillite sniffed at the use of the word.
"That one is a lot like you," he said,
interrupting the flow of Rubio's report.
"He is resilient."
"He thought I was someone called Coyus."
"Did he?"
"I don't know that name."
Malkador looked down at the coins.
"Not yet."
Rubio's jaw hardened as he grew weary of the sigillite's elliptical manner. But before he could say more, the hooded man went on.
"So, you've sent them to the White Mountain. The logical choice. I would have given that order, had you sought it."
He eyed him coldly.
"But you act on your own volition, and that does not excuse the deed."
Malkador leaned back, his face disappearing into the shadows of his hood.
"You are picking up Nathaniel's bad habits. I do not approve."
Rubio did not allow himself to be intimidated by the sigillite's immense psionic presence.
"I came back to the Imperial Palace for a reason, to explain my actions to you. But now I wonder if I have wasted my journey. Do you know what is at hand with the Silent Sisters who were abducted? Do you know but consider us all too commonplace to share it?"
"No."
Malkador laughed softly, and it seemed genuine.
"In truth, Rubio, I actually don't know."
He sighed.
"It's almost refreshing."
Rubio heard the door whisper open behind him and half turned, expecting to see the silver mechanoid returning to gather up more books. However, the figure that entered the chamber was someone else, and shockingly familiar to him. A man in robes similar to Malkador's, but rangy and long-limbed, with sandy skin and oval, purse-shaded eyes. The new arrival gave Rubio a curious look, but there was no recognition in it, only a measure of fear at being so firmly scrutinized by a legionary.
I brought the Amasek," he said haltingly.
Thank you, Aiel."
Malkador beckoned him closer, and the man gave Rubio a wide berth, carrying a silver tray with an elaborate bottle and a pair of balloon glasses over to the table.
We'll continue our conversation in a moment," added the sigillite.
Rubio glared at the man. There he stood, perfectly well and apparently unharmed. And yet days ago the legionary had watched this person torn asunder by animal panic, watched the same man throw himself to certain death from the Eagle's Highway.
"You are Wintour," he said slowly.
The man put down the tray and retreated, closer to Malkador.
"Yes, forgive me, Sir Knight, but I do not know you." "I saw you die."
The words formed on Rubio's lips, but the sigilite gave the slightest shake of the head, and they were never uttered.
"You came here because you have something for me."
Malkador became terse.
"Let's have it then. As these days pass and the War Master draws closer, time is the only commodity we cannot waste."
Rubio removed a loop of recording wire from one of the pouches on his belt and passed it to Malkador. The sigilite gave the spool a curious look, then connected it to the data slate he had been using. After a moment, a recording began to play.
"Horus," said the voices, their timbre breathy and disordered. "Come, Malkador, seek peace."
Wintour visibly flinched at the mention of the War Master's name, but Malkador's expression remained impassive. He listened to the recording play out and looped back to its start twice over before finally detaching the spool.
"At last," he muttered. "I suspected a message would form eventually. But the content..."
Malkador gave a dry laugh and glanced at Wintour.
"What do you make of that, Aiel? Don't be afraid to say what you're thinking."
"I would be cast a fool to give voice to my first hope," the other man said ruefully. "But all right, I'll say it."
He sighed.
"It almost sounds like an offer of truce."
"Seek peace," echoed Malkador. "I have to dig deep to remember the shape of such a thing."
"If the message is from Horus Lupercal," said Rubio, "only one thing is certain. This is a trap of some sort."
"Very possibly."
Malkador got up, reaching for the black iron staff. It slid soundlessly into his hand, and he used it to pull himself to his full height.
"So, of course, I have to see it for myself."
Rubio folded his arms across his chest.
"That isn't why I brought this datum to you. I came to..."
"Warn me. Yes, thank you."
Malkador dismissed the idea with a wave of his hand.
"But instead you played the role this design always had for you. The cogs turn."
He made a circling motion with a finger.
"The clock chimes. The hour is almost upon us."
He sighed, closing his eyes for a moment and looking inward.
"I really did think we might have more time. But the signs are all there. The turncoats are moving. The vipers in our midst are stirring."
"You should not leave the Imperial Palace," insisted Rubio. "Lord Dorn would have my head if I allowed it."
"Rogel has enough to occupy his thoughts."
The sigilite spoke to Wintour.
"Aiel, have my personal shuttle prepared for immediate departure. Brother Rubio and I are taking our leave."
Wintour blinked.
"What destination shall I give them?"
"White Mountain," Rubio answered, uttering the name as if someone else had spoken through him. The sun hung above the horizon, but scant measure of its light could find the warriors in the chamber where they had gathered, deep within the peak of the old forgotten fortress. It was a broad resonance space, a naturally occurring cavern that had been widened by the use of stone burners and other geoformer tools, the dead rock remade into platforms and sharp angles of a kind that would never occur without human intervention. Throughout the space, computational devices and cogitator servitors worked in clinking, whirring harmony, with spinning brassy mechanisms and pale faces alike lit by the pallid glow of great hololithic panels. The ghostly display panels hung in the cold, unmoving air like great animate tapestries, with waterfalls of text and numerals rolling endlessly from top to bottom. Garrow looked around, and each panel he settled upon gave him no more understanding than the last. He found the scientician, the woman Brell, stealing a glance in his direction, and once caught in the act, she shied away. At his side, Loken pointed towards a larger holographic display on the highest level of the gloomy chamber, a vast projection of the globe of terror, turning slowly on a canted axis. Indicators resembling long gold needles pierced the surface of the simulated planet in dozens of different locations.
"There," he said, "all the recoveries so far."
Varan and Galor stood directly beneath the ghostly sphere. The former World Eater's legionary glared at the display as if he expected it to insult him, while the younger legionary looked on in fascination. They had not had much opportunity to speak since their arrival at the White Mountain with their cargo of newly rescued captives, and Varan's terse report had left Garrow with more questions than answers. Garrow threw them a nod and halted before the hololith, taking in the scope of it.
"So many," he breathed,
and then his tone hardened.
"What if this circumstance were reversed? What if it were our brother legionaries returning from the rolls of the war dead, and the Sisterhood were the ones keeping it from us?"
"There would be fury in that, and no mistake," growled Varan. "But the Untouchables are not fools. They would tell us."
"Or else kills those they found and disintegrates the remains," noted Galor.
Loken ignored the opening and gestured at the display again.
"You wanted to see where they came from.
Here is your answer.
As I said before, there is no discernible pattern to the abduction and return of the pariahs. They are from dozens of different witch-seeker carders, all of differing rank and age. The locations where they were last sighted and the ones where they were found have no apparent correlation."
As he said the words, differing indicators lit up and datum panels rose and fell. Each one briefly showed the face of a silent sister, along with personal details and a field report. Garrow saw Melida Jidasian's image float by, and he frowned.
"The questions return. Who did this and why?"
"If I may..."
Brell cleared her throat and ventured closer, skirting the group of legionaries at the edge of the glow cast by the floating globe.
"We have known since the first instance of the War Master's Rebellion that there are those who support Horus Lupercal on Terra and the colonies of the Sol System, a network of spies and collaborators."
"We keep killing them, and they keep resurfacing,"
said Varan with a sniff. "The roots of the weeds run deep. Of course, if the sigillate in the Imperial Fist would let us off the chain once in a while, it would be a different story."
"Carry on," Loken said, nodding at her. Brell took a deep breath.
"The war has been taxing for the Loyalist forces and those of the insurrectionists. The ruin storm caused disarray on both sides of the schism. Confusion, destruction, and..."
"You need not speak of that which we have lived through," Garrow said quietly. "Your point, scientician."
She looked directly at him, and he saw a curious emotion in her eyes. Hope, or so it seemed.
"Have you heard of a text called the Lectitio Divinitatus? It is a manuscript authored by the turncoat Primarch Lorgar Aurelian in better days, when he considered his duty to the throne a sacred one."
"I know what it is," Garrow said.
Secreted amongst his war gear, unseen and unknown by Garrow's fellow knights errant, was a battered booklet of cheap paper and red ink. He had first found a copy among the personal effects of his faithful housecarl, Caleb Arryn, after the man had given his life to save that of his commander. The words within it, and the illumination they provided, had ultimately led Nathaniel Garrow into the presence of a saint, and set him on the path that he walked now. The book spoke of the Emperor of Mankind, casting the father of the Primarchs and sire of Garrow's own former liege, Mortarion, as nothing less than a god made flesh. A deity, the first and only to truly deserve the name. In those pages, Garrow had found purpose again. But a part of the veteran warrior was afraid of where that would lead him. He wanted nothing more than to know an end to this destructive conflict. He would go to his grave if fate willed it, if only that insight was granted to him. Brell was still talking, and Garrow quieted his own thoughts.
At first we believed there was some form of mental conditioning at hand among the followers of this so-called imperial cult, she went on. But the reality is far more prosaic. The anxieties and misplaced fears of those who seek out these churches are calmed by the words of the book and the hope it provides. Hope for survival in a turbulent galaxy, from the Emperor's hand.
You don't need to accept gods and pray to some brass idol to believe in that, scoffed Varan.
Some do, Loken noted.
The Imperial cult are a wild card, said Brell in a hectoring tone. They support the Emperor's leadership and the ideal of the Imperium, but they undermine his vision of a secular universe. And in this, they open themselves up to subversion by the enemy.
We suspected these clandestine churches were actually fronts for insurrectionist cells, added Loken. And some were. But most are just disciples.
Doesn't matter, said Varan. They attract those mutant vermin just the same. Better off if we rid ourselves of them.
Somewhere on one of the cogitator consoles, a signal bell rang to indicate the detection of an incoming aircraft, and Brell scuttled away into the shadows to address it, while Loken ignored Varan's comment and carried on.
Whatever their motivation, these groups are being used as unwitting foci for the will of darker powers. And into this bedlam come these lost pariahs, their minds taken to the brink of madness and then reformed. Returning to us, each bearing a shard of a greater message.
Galor eyed him.
Whose message, Loken? You speak with conviction, as if you already know that answer.
Horus, he said with a nod to himself.
I know my Primarch's ways. I hear the fragments of his voice in theirs.
Loken jutted his chin at the panels, showing the faces of the recovered sisters.
You hear his voice?
Garrow said warily.
Don't you?
Loken met his gaze, and for a troubling instant, Garrow saw a shadow of the wild-eyed, tormented creature he had found in the ashes of Istvan. He saw Cerberus, the broken soul that had almost consumed the former lunar wolf.
Horus speaks here. I know it.
Clearly you have an ear for this, said Galor.
So enlighten us. What is he saying?
Loken frowned, realizing he had overstepped.
Brell has yet to calculate a fully cogent syntax.
I did not ask you that, Galor went on. What does your instinct tell you?
Garrow watched the conflict play out over the other legionary's scarred face as Loken found his way to a reply.
I looked my gene father in the eye on the vengeful spirit, and he threw back any hope of reconciliation. But this message, it has all the shape of an entreaty upon it.
A bid for peace?
Galor was incredulous.
After everything the Vormaster has done? After all he has unleashed upon the universe? How could he be so arrogant?
He is Horus Lupercal, Loken shot back.
He defies definition, as both my general and my enemy.
It's a lie, said Garrow.
And without conscious thought, his hand dropped to the hilt of Libertas, resting there.
You know that. The Warmaster places a final ploy on the field of battle, a last tactic to distract us before he launches his invasion. That is what we see before us.
Perhaps, Loken nodded, then halted.
But the question has to be uttered, Garrow, and only I am fit to ask it. I am the only one in this room who was there at the start, before the fall at Davin tainted my Primarch and the rot set in. No one here can hate him as much as I do. No one here can know the shame and rage that burns in me.
He jabbed a finger at the other warriors.
You three share the same pain of seeing your legion's honour broken, of watching your brothers and your Primarch turn against those we are oath-sworn to protect. That I do not seek to diminish. He looked away. But my legion was the first. My Primarch, at the heart of it all. I will carry that burden into eternity. And that is why I alone must ask the impossible. What if it is not a lie?
He's still out of his skull, snarled Varan, glaring at Garrow. We should have left him with the cinders and corpses at Istvaen.
Garrow's mind raced at the possibility Loken suggested, but he fought to keep his tone neutral.
Garvil, it cannot be. No one dares to utter the words, but the truth is there before us. Terror is caught in the pincers of the enemy advance. Horus has the momentum and great forces at his command. We will be hard-pressed to repel him from this world, and he knows it. So why, then, would he contemplate a truce? Because Horus knows, somewhere deep inside, that this war will lead to the ruin of everything.
Loken spoke with conviction. Even as lost as he is, some part of him sees that dark and endless tomorrow unfolding.
And so do I.
He pointed at Garrow. So do you. Keela showed you, didn't she?
Who in Hades is Keela?
Said Varan. Garrow's breath caught in his throat. He felt a gossamer touch on his hand, as if the saints were there with him in that moment, bringing time to a halt once again.
A few days ago, you told me you were willing to execute these messengers, said Garrow.
You made me reconsider my position, Loken went on.
As infinitesimal as the chance may be, even if in a billion iterations of events the cards still fall towards treachery and betrayal, after all the murdered souls and burned worlds, after everything lost and shattered by this conflict, after all the unspeakable horrors that have been unleashed upon us, do we not owe the galaxy one last hope to end this before the veil of night falls forever?
Suddenly, all of Loken's energy departed, and as if the effort had left him spent, he seemed diminished.
We have nothing, and everything, to lose.
He's right, of course, said a familiar voice.
Brell returned from the shadows, accompanied by another legionary in slate-coloured power armour and a hooded figure with a black iron staff. The staff tapped out the distance as the Sigilite and Tylos Rubio walked into the light, with the scientician trailing at their heels.
If there is even the slightest possibility we can end this war, it must not be ignored.
Garrow noted that Rubio seemed ill at ease, doubtless feeling the muting effect of the White Mountain's psychic countermeasures. But Malkador showed no such discomfort. As he always did, the Sigilite walked into every room he entered as if he had the answers to every question and the insight to know every outcome.
You came to see for yourself, said Garrow. I expected as much. You would never leave such a matter to the hands of others.
Malkador glanced at the knight's errant, and then to Brell.
You will maintain a secure perimeter while I view the recoveries and their chorus. Alone.
Then he looked to Garrow, raising an eyebrow at the warrior's insubordinate tone.
Understand, Nathaniel. Some things are too important to delegate.
No.
Garrow shook his head, glancing at Loken and then back to the Sigilite.
I do not believe that is at the heart of this. You are entranced by enigmas, Lord Regent. They are the warp and weft of you. And to keep them safe, your circle of trust is so very small. How many terrible secrets do you know that you have never spoken of to any other? You confide in no one.
A strange mix of annoyance and sorrow glittered briefly in the Sigilite's gaze.
It is a burden, he allowed.
It's a trap,
snapped Garrow. Malkador's expression shifted, hardening.
I know you do not think I am unaware of that possibility. I know you do not think me a fool.
No,
Garrow replied.
But for 7 years, the galaxy has known the most destructive conflict in human history, all because the ambitions of Horus Lupercal were underestimated. Now is not the time to repeat that grave error.
He took a step closer to the sigillite, knowing he had passed beyond the bounds of defiance for what might be the last time. Still, he persisted.
The Warmaster lays out a mystery for you, the perfect lure, and you come to look it in the eye. It is hubris of the highest order.
Watch your tone, Nathaniel.
Malkador's reply was icy. Garrow did not.
When you venture into the holding levels beneath us, what will surround you? The Imperium's most powerful counter-psionic technology and hundreds of psychic blanks. You will be robbed of every gift you have, Sigillite. You will be vulnerable.
You think so?
Malkador said dryly.
I am almost insulted.
I will go with him.
Rubio spoke without looking up.
I am the logical choice.
Oh?
The Sigillite glared at the legionary.
How so?
I've already heard some of the message. I am already inside the circle, as Garrow put it. And while my psionic skills will be negated, I am still a warrior of the Legionis Astartes. If danger arises, I will meet it.
Would you?
Malkador's piercing gaze returned to bore into Garrow.
And would that be acceptable to you, battle captain?
Each word was a chip of flint, hard and cutting.
It will have to do, allowed Garrow.
Good.
Malkador turned away.
Now you have finished giving me orders, I will give you yours.
He strode off, back towards the shadows, his voice echoing.
Under no circumstances am I to be disturbed, on pain of termination. No record will be kept of what transpires on the holding levels, and monitoring will be disengaged until I command otherwise.
He paused, allowing Rubio and Brell to fall in with him.
Hold this place safe, no matter what the cost.
The Sigillite's final words followed him into the gloom.
Safe from what?
Muttered Varan. On one of the cogitator consoles, a signal bell began to ring. The deeper they went, the more Rubio felt the ghostly pressure upon him. In the trials he had faced as a youth on Ultramar, a lifetime ago in the before, when he had still been wholly human, his mentors had put him to the test by releasing him at the bottom of a great silo filled with icy lake water. The challenge was to survive as long as possible in the grip of the black depths, to resist the urge to race for the surface. Rubio had done well and passed the trial, but he had never forgotten the dreadful sense of density about him, the suffocating force bearing down and threatening to crush his body. The telepathic negation of the White Mountain brought that memory back, flaring brightly in his thoughts. The silence crowding in on Rubio was oppressive, and he wondered if this was what life was like for those born without the psychogene. He had suffered temporary telepathic negation before, of course, in battle, and in the presence of other pariahs, but never at such a nullifying volume as he experienced now. It took a conscious effort to stop his breathing from becoming laboured and heavy, and he cast a sideways look towards the Sigillite, wondering if Malkador ever experienced the like. The hooded man slowed as they approached a huge circular hatch set in a stone wall.
"Ah, there we are," he said.
There was a diamond-shaped observation portal built into the door, as tall as a human, made of thick armour glass. Through it, Rubio saw the blurry shapes of open-fronted cells, lit by floating glow-globes.
"One moment, please."
Brell went to an optical scanner built into the frame of the hatch and allowed it to take an image of her eyes. Next, she put her thumb to a bloodlock sampler, and presently the hidden mechanism in the great door began to cycle open. Rimes of hoarfrost around the hinges and the edge crackled and split as metal moved on metal. As the seal between the hatch and the frame parted, warmer air from within puffed out and brought with it the sound of overlapping voices muttering across one another in nonsensical profusion.
"Wait here," ordered Malkador.
And Brell's body language made it abundantly clear that she was eager not to venture inside. She bowed and shot Rubio a look that he couldn't read. Forcing himself to ignore the constant pressure in his thoughts, the warrior followed the sigillite into the holding chamber, and the hatch dropped back into place behind him. On the far side, Brell moved to stand close to the glass, peering in at them. The voices were a constant refrain. Each cell was occupied by a woman in a shapeless coverall, some standing, others slumped against the wall or lying upon sleeping pallets. All of them bore the signature shorn scalps of the Silent Sisterhood, although their Carda tattoos varied widely. Some had been here longer than others, as evidenced by the fuzz of hair beginning to grow back. Each one had a life support cuff around one wrist, and from it a plastic tube snaked away to a pack of glutinous nutrient gel hanging from a rack. Eyeless Medicaid servitors ignored the two new arrivals, wandering the edges of the chamber, pausing here and there to check on the status of the recoveries. Rubio approached the closest of the pariah sisters, wincing at the potency of her null effect. She stared blankly into the middle distance, apparently unaware of his presence. Every few moments she uttered a word that was meaningless in isolation.
"Hearing one voice at a time will not suffice," said Malkador. "All of them must come together."
"Perhaps there is a trigger."
He blinked. Rubio's thoughts were becoming sluggish, moving like ponderous icebergs through a thick sea. He set his jaw and concentrated.
"Just listen."
The sigillite closed his eyes. Rubio was conscious of his own heart's beating, the trip hammer double thud sounding through his bloodstream. He held his breath, forcing himself to find a moment of stillness. Time thickened as the minutes passed. The tones spoken by the women were gibberish, a constant babble of noise that irritated him with its incoherence. His hands tightened into fists. He felt impotent and powerless to comprehend. Until, without warning, the words began to take shape. Slowly at first, then more clearly, as the piecemeal elements came into a kind of crude synchronization. It was the oral equivalent of an optical illusion, a sound that appeared to be one thing, suddenly reframed by his mind into something very different.
"His hand. Darkness. This place."
It was not one voice that uttered the words, but all of them. Rubio gasped as the shape of the speech took form. He was on the brink of understanding it, so close to grasping the whole from the shattered pieces.
"Horus," came the refrain. "Lupercal."
"Report," barked Garrow, as Galor raced to the security console. The younger legionary grimaced.
"Scry sensors on the ridgeline report detection of two large airborne objects descending from altitude. They have ignored all automated vox signals warning them to divert from restricted airspace."
"Show us," said Varen.
Galor stabbed a control key, and the giant hololithic globe winked out, to be replaced by a simulated window projecting a live visual feed from scanners atop the grey peaks. A pair of smooth-flanked craft dropped out of the low cloud, falling fast on clusters of retrojets mounted on stubby winglets along their bulbous flanks.
"Aeronefs," said Garrow. "Cargo leviathans, by the look of them. They have no business here."
"Heat sweep reveals massive thermal blooms within their hulls,"
Gallo went on.
"Weapons?"
growled Varen. Gallo shook his head.
"Humans. Hundreds of them. Packed within."
Loken marched over to the security console and snapped out a command to the servitor working there.
Bring fire control to this panel. Reveal and activate the defensive macro cannon turrets.
There!
Varen pointed at the display pane. The images of the huge airships showed great black pennants unfolding along the flanks of the two craft, catching in the wind as they descended.
They've shown their colours!
Garrow heard Loken stifle a growl of anger. Daubed crudely on the pennants was the symbol of a glaring, slitted eye upon an arrow stabbing downward.
Horus's mark!
Galor sneered.
I doubt they'll be open to parley then.
How did they find us here? Isn't the location of this facility supposed to be a closely guarded secret?
Said Varen.
Not anymore,
noted Galor.
Target those vessels and fire! Loken snapped. Full salvo!
The order should have been Garrow's to give, but he said nothing. Had that symbol been the skull and star of the Death Guard, he might have reacted with the same vehemence. The stone floor vibrated with the thunder of titanic guns, as the weapons spat death from their hidden redoubts in the crags and crevices of the White Mountain. Sprays of counterfire from rocket pods bolted to the airframes of the cargo haulers blasted into the air, leaving corkscrew trails of yellow smoke behind them, and the rudimentary warheads clattered artlessly across the mountainside. The noise and fury of them was spent heedlessly, while the macro shells from the fortress's weaponry hit their targets with pinpoint precision. Both of the aeronefs were fatally holed, their backs breaking as their superstructures crumpled and split. But they were close to the ground, low enough that they could spill their cargo onto the grey ice fields even as they crash-landed. Garrow watched through the eyes of the sensors as countless specks, each one a person, ejected themselves from the dying craft and turned towards their objective. In the squalid, grinding secrecy of the silent war that Malkador had dragged them into, the enemy was always of this stripe, the misguided and the coerced, the brainwashed and the fanatical. But they had hidden their numbers, skittering away into the shadows while the knights errant culled those too slow to escape. Garrow suspected that the War Master's sympathisers had armies out there somewhere. And now he knew he had been right. Here was the fodder for the cannons, the first waves of the dismissed and disposable to be thrown at Terra's bastions, existing only to clog their pathways and tire their guns. Horus was not here. Not yet. But the shadow he cast fell far, and what hid beneath it was stirring.
"There's too many to target with the cannons," said Galor. "What is the command battle, Captain?"
Garrow allowed Libertas to slip free of its scabbard.
"We go to meet them," he said.
The deep rumble of the cannons through the rock sent trickles of dust down from the ceiling, and Rubio instinctively grasped the hilt of his sword. Malkador shook his head.
"Be still," he admonished,
and the sigillite took a step forward, leading with his staff. He planted it firmly on the stone floor and leaned towards the nearest of the muttering sisters, close enough that he could have laid a gentle kiss upon her cheek. Illuminated by the crackle of the unquenchable plasma flames in the iron basket atop the staff, the great Psyker's aspect took on a fearsome cast.
"Oath," said the chorus. "Father!"
"I am here," Malkador said to the air. "Speak your piece."
Rubio's blood became ice, when at last the group voice became fully coherent. The fragmentary sound elements merged in a sing-song cadence that disturbed him with its atonal patterns.
"These words are from Horus Lupercal, first among equals."
From the babbling disorder came structure, as if a shapeless froth of foam had randomly conformed into a perfect cube.
"He knows you would come, Malkador. He knows what you would seek."
"You hear that, yes?"
The sigillite raised a bony finger.
"Mark my soul, I do,"
Rubio said softly. The chorus disquieted the legionary in a way he could not articulate. They were just voices, just words. But each one seemed to pluck at his sense of reality, peeling back another layer of it with each gasping utterance.
"This schism has broken so much,
So many oaths sundered, taboos broken, worlds burned, names lost.
Names.
Rubio was unable to stop himself from repeating the word. Jotun, the mysterious knight-errant he had met in the jungle, had reacted oddly when speaking his name, and he had called Rubio by a different title, Koyos. What did it mean? The question shouted at him, trapped in the walls of his skull, unable to escape.
If only time might turn back, what choice would he have made?
The chorus's questions echoed off the stone walls.
Would his father have chosen differently? Or is it that he has known this age would unfold and allowed it to happen?
Fate shows us the path, Malkador said,
looking from face to face among the whispering horde.
We choose if we walk it. Tell me what you want.
The Emperor once said, I seek peace for a turbulent universe. You wish that too, Sigilite.
In his mind, that turbulence was filling every iota of Tylos Rubio's being. Malkador seemed unaware of it, indifferent and callous to the suffering of the legionary. But that was like him. The Regent of Terror ruled the throne world in the Emperor's stead with cold disdain for the people, not just of this planet, but of all planets. They were pieces in his great game. He hated them. Hated everything. Yes. Rubio understood that now. A wet gasp escaped his lips. Deep within him, something was rising. It had been buried deep, so deep that the legionary had never known of its existence. But now a puzzle made of memory began to reassemble itself, the shape of a lost thought, each piece unlocking as a long-awaited pattern of words reached his consciousness.
Horus strives for that ideal,
wailed the chorus.
That is what he was made for, Malkador shouted back. It is the reason we are here.
His hands clenched tightly around the length of the black iron staff.
For Terror's sake!
The Sigilite let out a peal of bitter laughter, and in this isolated place, where none would know it, he briefly allowed himself to be vulnerable. Rubio saw Malkador's true age etched upon him, and a face filled with lifetimes of loss, terrible choices, and hidden regrets. In this moment, he was only a man, stripped of his incredible powers, weak and breakable, like all the rest of humankind. He would never say it aloud, but there was a part of Malkador that dared to hope there could still be peace, a long-faded idealist who had once possessed the courage to reach for trust and faith. But Rubio could only hate him. The disdain leaked from old memory, from a vision of the Sigilite's true self. He deserved no pity. He was a cancer on the world, playing his games while the Emperor toiled ceaselessly to hold back the tide of chaos.
Is that really what you ask for now?
Malkador was saying, ignorant of the turmoil in Rubio's thoughts.
A ceasefire? How can you...
Not by design of his father, said the voices,
hardening into hissing and droning tones, breaking any possible thread of hope with savage insistence.
Not a galaxy ceded to the unworthy, ruled by the weakest.
No.
The Sigilite drew a hand across his face.
After all this, what have you done, Lupercal? Was Garrow right? Did you build this complex riddle just to spite me?
His voice rose as he spoke, until he was bellowing.
Are you so grand and yet so small? So petty? Answer!
Come, Malkador, the chorus whispered. Your time is at an end. Horus will grant you the Emperor's peace.
What?
Something so uncommon to the Sigilite that it was almost alien to him twisted across his expression. Fear.
No. You cannot touch me here. It is not possible.
He turned at a metallic sound, slicing through the rise and fall of the refrain. and there was Rubio, slowly drawing his inert force sword from its scabbard.
"You will lead us all to ruin."
His eyes had lost focus, and his voice was distant and unreal.
"I remember now. I remember what I was shown."
"Through his hand," said the chorus, "reaching to you."
As it rose in a killer's grip, the lethal, fractal-edged blade of Rubio's sword was dead crystal, haloed with a dull shimmer by the light of the glow globes. The final words of the message cemented the deed. Rubio was released to complete the act, answering to a directive that had lain unseen in his mind for 7 long years, now unfolding into its terrible fullness.
"Across the darkness, to this place."
The sword flashed backward in a reversed stab, the tip of the blade breaking through the armour glass of the observation window. On the far side of it, Talidian Brell, transfixed by the shock of what she was seeing, did not escape as the weapon cleaved her breastbone in two and burst from her thin shoulders. When it drew back, her ruined body crumpled to a heap upon the stones. The scientician's blood rolled off the massive blade, pitter-pattering against the ground, as Rubio brought it up and into an executioner's stance.
"I remember now,"
he repeated, his gaze lost and dead as the chorus finally fell silent.
"It has been a long time coming."